night roaring low overhead in a bellow of turbines, flanks gleaming with their own private constellations of running lights. By the time he was 10, he'd been able to identify every major class by sight. And when he'd climbed up into the attic, which he'd been able to do only when all of his moms assumed one of the others had him in sight, he could actually get an angle down onto Burdett Port's docks, where those massive constructs landed. Oh, the cargoes he'd summoned from dreams of other steadings. The pallets and boxes, the containerized cargo, the nets of fruit and vegetables. He'd watched stevedores unload the cavernous holds. There'd been far more muscle power and far less automation at the time, and wished he was one of them. And he'd devoured everything he could find in print and on vid about not just the atmospheric ships, but about the freighters that called on Grayson, however rarely, from far beyond his own horizons. He'd ingested anything and everything, from the ballad of the wreck of the Stettholder Fitzgerald to the mystery of the colony ship Agnes Celeste and her vanished crew, and he'd known what he wanted. Not that there'd ever be much chance he could have it. His parents had been relatively well off by Grayson standards, but certainly not wealthy. And like all too many Grayson families, he'd been the only boy. Besides, Grayson was the backside of nowhere. The atmospheric freighters that fascinated him so spent their time hauling purely Grayson products and produce, because there was none from anywhere else. What chance did a boy from Burdett Steading have of ever seeing another star, smelling the air of a planet that didn't try to poison him every day of his life? That had been his father's opinion, at any rate, and all of his mother's had loyally shared it, although Mom Joan had seemed just a little less convinced than the others. She always had appreciated that stubborn streak of his. He never had gotten aboard one of the Atmo freighters. For that matter, he'd never gotten aboard a space freighter. But he'd gotten into space anyway, and now, as he gazed at that endless vista of captive warships, looked at the torn and shredded armor, at the ink-black holes punched deep into core hulls, and the blown-out scabs of armor where life pods had erupted into space, he remembered another ship in other battles. He remembered GMS Covington and the Battle of Yeltsin, the Battle of Blackbird. He remembered the stench of smoke and burning flesh through the ventilators, the scream of damage alarms, the incoming missiles, and the indescribable shockwave of hits lashing through her hull. He remembered a young lieutenant who'd known he was about to die defending his planet. But that lieutenant had lived instead because a foreign-born woman, already wounded from the battle which had saved his protector's life, had flung her ship and her crew between someone else's world and those who would have killed every human being on it without her. Which was how a considerably older captain of the Grayson Space Navy, serving in the Protector's Own, found himself here, playing Sorter of the Slain to the Salarian League Navy.
"What's the latest from Seven, David?"
he asked Lieutenant Calais.
"They're about ready for the first tranche," Calais replied, keying up the report on his Unilink, and grimaced. "They're due to finish the last of the Yawada strike wreckage by Tuesday."
"I don't know which is worse, that or this."
Clayton waved at the silently waiting starships.
"Believe me, sir, it's the Yawada wreckage."
Callie's expression was grim.
"These people," he twitched his head at the same starships, "got hammered because they friggin' well deserved it. We didn't go looking for them, they came looking for us. I'm sorry it got so many of them killed, but that's what happens when you attack somebody without bothering to declare war first. And at least every damned one of those ships was at battle stations, with everybody aboard in skin suits. Not so much for the Yawada strike."
The lieutenant turned to stare out at the barely visible cluster of working lights that marked the enormous Unicorn 7 asteroid complex. The Hauptmann Cartel's Unicorn Salvage Yard and the Unicorn 7 refineries had been repurposed as one of the Manticore B reclamation centers, processing the wreckage from the orbital infrastructure, which had been torn to pieces in the Yawada strike less than 5 months ago.
"The reclamation crews are still finding bodies search and rescue missed," he said. "Last week, one of the Seven crews found their own forewoman's cousin."
His nostrils flared.
"I'm sure we'll find a few bodies when we start scrapping these, too, but at least they won't be our damned relatives."
Clayton nodded. He was grateful he'd been spared from the cleanup after the Blackbird strike, but he knew enough men, and women now, in the GSN who hadn't been.
"There was a curse back on old Earth," he said. "I don't know if you managed